This week, we're continuing a series of sketches on Spokane City Council candidates. We're now on District 1, which includes Hilliard, the Logan neighborhood near Gonzaga, and part of East Central. This is an interview with me, Rebecca White, and candidate Nagmana Shirazi. She's one of three candidates running for Spokane City Council District 1. This interview has been edited for length and clarity. You can find more City Council interviews on SpokanePublicRadio.org. All right. Well, my first question that I am trying to ask every candidate, you know, before we get into any policy details, is just tell me a little bit about yourself and why you're running for City Council.
Okay. So my name is Nagmana Shirazi. I am an immigrant from Pakistan. I'm a single mother. I'm a renter. I have lived in the district for about 10 years. I'm a scientist, an educator, and I'm a community leader. There is a necessary perspective to the council that I can bring to it. All these different intersectionalities that I've mentioned, as I'm an immigrant, I'm a person of color. I work full time, and yet I'm, you know, still struggling to make ends meet sometimes. And there are so many people like me in my district who are facing hardship, which kind of, you know, COVID-19 has brought that to the forefront, that Northeast Spokane is in a particularly different position. And because I feel that the voices from District 1 are not heard that much, and District 1 was zoned in the 20s as a, you know, multi-use, where people would live, you know, multi-level family use, and also for small businesses so that people have access and mobility ease to be able to, you know, just work and live in the same area. But I don't believe, despite the fact that District 1 has been the largest generator of sales tax for the city of Spokane, there's been no development in the last 96 years that I've heard of in District 1. And the people who live here have so much pride in where they live and the communities that are thriving here, and people have lived here for absolute years and years and go back. They have so much history and so much pride in the district. And we need to develop this. And I believe 96 years, that's how we were zoned. That's how long ago we were zoned, in the 20s. And we still have 61 miles of unpaved streets and roads that are still there today. And we want to attract more business in our area. We want to have more small businesses come in. But can you imagine the drain on finances when somebody's asked to, you know, pave the street first, put in a sidewalk, connect to the sewage system, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and where does the money go? And by definition of that fact, you know, it's a small business. So, you know, those grants and money that they're bringing in, they need to set up their infrastructure rather than have to pay all these bills. Admittedly, most of it will be paid back to them by the city. But, you know, who has that kind of money to invest in before you even go in there? So these are not corporates that we're talking about. We're talking about small businesses. And if we don't put this infrastructure into place, ready for people to come in and start working, you know, how are we incentivizing on top of that? I don't even know. So District 1 really, the voices have not been conveyed to City Council. City Council has been ignoring District 1 from the beginning. So that's why I'm running, so that I can bring the voices of people like me who are living and working in the district can be conveyed to City Council, so that the perspective that I bring, whether it's small businesses, whether it's immigrant, whether it's people like me who are working full time and yet finding it difficult to make ends meet. That's why I'm running.
So that kind of brings us to my next question. Our economy in Spokane has been hit pretty hard by the pandemic. Is there things our city should be doing to help people and businesses recover from this?
Well, yeah. I mean, the CARES Act dollars, there were so many barriers to people. It needed so much energy and so much effort for people, for small businesses to, you know, apply for those grants and get those money. There are plenty of examples where people were, you know, they gave up, or they didn't even bother, or they didn't qualify. And does that mean that they're not in the district or in the city of Spokane, or they shouldn't get that money? Everyone's affected by COVID-19. So the city council, I feel, needs to ensure that the money going to the city from the recent coronavirus package provides relief to businesses and renters. The city needs to also provide relief to those struggling to catch up on utility bills. I am one of those people who is behind on my utility payment right now. I'm catching up slowly, but you know, I could do with a little bit of help. So all the money that is coming through for us, I believe the city needs to kind of come up with a structure and a plan to make sure that, you know, those who have been left behind, those who have fallen through the cracks, it is more accessible and readily available for people.
All right. Well, yeah, the next question I had for you that I'm really trying to bring up with every candidate was homelessness. It was already a pretty huge issue in our community before the pandemic. And now that we've had this economic hardship, with an eviction moratorium that at some point will run out, it could get a lot worse. What should the city really be doing to improve our shelter system so it is prepared for our community's needs?
I believe that we need to be proactive in being prepared for the cold months, and we need to make more housing available. I support a housing first model because I believe that housing and having a roof over your head is a human right. And the eviction moratoriums, while they're great for people to keep them in their homes, and because of COVID, I understand that, you know, and I'm one of those people who lives one paycheck away from being on the street. So I completely, completely understand that those are needed. But what about the landlords who are not getting the rent, you know? So we have to look at the solution in a different way, perhaps look at utility payments or actually rent assistance is what I think is the term we're looking for, is rental assistance going straight to the landlords, which keeps people in their homes. You know, they're not being evicted. And yet those who depend on that income for livelihood and live on that fixed income can continue to thrive and continue to live their lives. So we have to look for solutions that are good for both sides, not just the one side. But we do need the eviction moratorium, of course, because we need to keep people in their homes. But we have to think about the landlords as well.
And so for, you know, homeless shelters, I think that's a big part of, you know, you mentioned being prepared for winter. I know there are things the city is doing, like making a system that makes tracking beds faster. And I've heard some people talk about we need to keep track of where people who are homeless are, so we're making sure that our programs really work. Is there anything in that sort of data or just what we do with our shelter system in the future that maybe our city should be looking at?
Well, yes, because I think there are so many factors involved. First of all, and when I said, you know, cold weather, we also need to think about hot weather. You know, we want the cooling and the warming shelters in place before bad weather happens. And they don't have to be concentrated downtown. They should be spaced out in such a way that they're, you know, the services that they need, the people need to access, like whether it's, you know, whatever kind of services, whether mental health services or, you know, any kind of medical services that they need, the courts, or, you know, it should be accessible. So, you know, we need to think in terms of where are we putting these shelters. And like the Envision Center, for instance, we have that. But, you know, where's the nearest shelter? It's like miles away. So for people to be able to get to it, you know, are we taking that into account? Because if you're homeless, you obviously don't have that kind of money to be able to, like, travel on bus routes and things like that. So there is a whole lot that we have to think about. And I feel that the city really needs to sit down and look at the structure of what we're proposing. And we can't be just reactive all the time. We need to be proactive, and we need to be thinking in terms of, you know, what is working with other cities the size of Spokane with same and similar issues. We need to be looking at other demographics of, you know, who can help, and maybe other sectors to see where the help can be coming in from. And you know, because we're all in it together, we're a city, we're not just the city council and not just people who live in the city. We are a city, which means that we have a whole structure that we need to be able to think in terms of and mobilize for helping each other out. We're an ecosystem in its own right.
And you did address this a little bit in your first answer to my question that I had. Affordable housing, it's been a crisis for years. But during the last couple months, it's gotten significantly worse, with purchasing a house feeling a lot farther away than it had in the past, and both rents also going up. Do you have sort of a policy approach that could potentially address the supply problem? Or also your predecessor on the city council, who she still is on the city council, Kate Burke, has been very invested in tenants' rights and kind of setting up these conversations to protect tenancy. Is there, I guess, either a supply approach or maybe a tenancy solution that you might have to address the housing crisis?
Well, I agree with tenants' rights and protections because, if we didn't have those in place, then a lot of people would suffer. And we know that there are certain bills in the legislature right now that we're looking at, which would help, on policy issues. I think I remember, was it HB? Well, basically, it's something that we were looking at. I'm trying to remember the number of the bill. It was Senator Marcy and who was the other one?
I'm looking it up as well.
I
guess you could just tell me what the bill does, that I could probably find it from there.
Okay, so basically it's going to HB 1070, I think, and HB 1220. And HB 1220 requires local jurisdictions to address racial disparities in housing. So then that means you're taking out certain language, you're putting in certain protections. And we have needed it for a long time, and especially in Spokane. HB 1070, I'm particularly excited about because it means we will be able to better fund transitional, emergency, and supportive housing. Both these bills are very needed, and I'm excited to see how we can better serve our houseless community based on both of them. And of course, increasing housing supply and transit access near economic opportunity means shorter commutes, more money in workers' pockets, and less environmental damage related to the sprawl. And so I would push to rezone current areas. Like, for instance, I've got Northtown Mall, and I know we've done some rezoning there, but Betsy and I were talking about, Councilwoman Wilkerson and I were talking about this a little bit a while back. And I was saying that, Northtown Mall, we lost Sears, we lost JCPenney, and, we're pretty much losing Macy's, and all this space is going to waste. And, Northtown Mall is kind of straddled in between Nevada and Division. And there's lots of, the frequency of the bus lines, and there's lots of access, there's ease of access. Plenty of parking already available. And, I've lived and worked on four different continents, wherever else I've been. One of the models, one of the models is where, you have like a big grocery store and childcare, daycare, like nail salon, hair salon, library, whatever, on the ground floor, on the main floor. And then you have lots and lots of parking underneath, basement style. And then 4 to 5, maybe 8 floors of apartments. And if we do something like that, imagine having that kind of facility available in the Northtown Mall area, or Northtown area, I should say, because this obviously affects the west side as well as the east side of Division, but getting away from single housing, single family housing. What it does, it creates density. It brings people to kind of, live in that area. Imagine coming home, picking up your child from daycare, or going grocery shopping first, picking up your child from daycare and taking them upstairs to your apartment, cooking while they sit down and do their homework, etc. It's a lifestyle thing, right? And you're watching over them, and you eat dinner, and then you still have time left over to be able to go hang out with friends, do whatever it is that you like to do in the evenings, right? And I've actually lived that lifestyle while my son was going to school, and because Spokane, when I researched Spokane before moving to Spokane 10 years ago, is listed as one of the top 10 family-friendly cities where you can go out and about and do everything. It's within about 20 minutes of wherever you live, which is fantastic. Not very many cities are able to boast that kind of a lifestyle, and you're kayaking, or you know, in the summer and the winter sports and the lakes and the, you know, so there's so much that we do outdoors in the summer, and we can do that, but we need to be able to live in a way that we sustain our leisure activities and they rejuvenate us to be able to do whatever we need to do the next day. And bringing in that kind of lifestyle, living around the area, and bringing in people so that there is patronage to those malls and shops, and people are spending their money where they live, it creates a thriving community. It creates a thriving lifestyle. And that's what we need to do.
And so one question I wanted to make sure to get to is, if you're elected to city council, you may be in a position to negotiate a police contract. You know, we just had one that the city council signed off on earlier this year. And there's, you know, conversations about the next one that'll have to be done by the end of this year. And so maybe you won't negotiate, but at least you'll get a chance to probably vote on one in the next several years. Do you think that our police department needs more transparency and more independent oversight? And if you had a say in a contract or other policy, would you advocate for that?
So I have been working with several groups in the community to create an Office of Civil Liberties and Civil Rights. And I would like very much to see the model that we're kind of proposing is, you know, there's education, there's awareness, there's outreach, and there are, you know, services and available for people who need different kinds of services, you know, like for small businesses and incentivized programs, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the things we want to work on is bringing the Office of the Ombudsman under that purview in that area. I do not believe the Spokane City Police Department should have any oversight over the Ombudsman's office. In fact, it should be the reverse. The Ombudsman's office needs to be independent of police oversight, because they're not in a position otherwise to, you know, call a spade and make any changes or recommendations unless they're always pressurized or, you know, thinking in terms of like what's in it for the police department. They really need to be thinking in terms of, okay, let's weigh the pros and cons here. What's good for the police department and what's good for the city and what's good for all the people living in the city, for all the population living in the city. So that needs to be independent. I completely am behind that full tilt. The other thing I believe that we need to critically look at is the military style equipment and weapons that the police department is seeking funding for. I don't agree with that. I believe that we need to, I strongly believe that mental health crisis responders should be part of the many calls that police also respond to. And while I do not support defunding the police, I do strongly support holding police accountable and ensuring that public safety is upheld without compromising on civil rights for our citizens. And, you know, officers and cops are not trained in mental health tactics. And so we need people to go along with them to be able to help with that kind of thing. So because de-escalation tactics can be very challenging for police officers when dealing with mental health crises, for instance, you know. Mental health experts can achieve a level of trust and safety that might not be possible with just the police on their own alone. So, go ahead. I was just going to say that, so while I understand why the city had to kind of accept the proposal that, you know, and go along with accepting the contract the way it was, because, you know, obviously people hadn't been paid or there were no raises effected in almost 2 years. But I feel still that there was room for negotiation to make sure that there was transparency and there was more, you know, like accountability on part of the police department that needed to have been brought into that whole aspect of negotiation.
Mm-hmm. And just to clarify, so are you saying that the city needs more co-deploy mental health teams than they currently have, and that needs to be like a more common practice?
I feel that, yes, I believe that is the case. We need Every area that we look at, when you know, like when you look at EMT services, you know, they have certain functions and they have certain purview. And, you know, if you're going out to go save a life, or you need to do that and focus on that. And if you're a police department official and you're called out to a call, you know, having to sit down and think in terms of, you know, which route am I going to go, it can be stressful on the police officer as well. And how is that going to affect the decision that they're making in responding to the call? What is the person's need? What do they need at that particular point in time? You know, are they responding correctly to the need, what the person needs, and therefore mistakes are made? And you know, and that's what I would like to see, is more mental health professionals or going along with the police department, or you know, maybe just concentrating on certain aspects of the police call rather than expecting them to gauge the situation alone in its own right in one way. Does that make sense?
Yes. And before we, you know, run out of time, I do want to ask you, one of my last questions is environmental policy. You know, our city has looked at some measures to, you know, preserve water, preserve our air quality, and, you know, plant more trees in the past. And, you know, as I think part in as an environmental justice issue, and as part, you know, encouraging stewardship, is that something you feel like is in the city's purview? And is there any areas with the environment that the city should be doing more to protect?
I support the efforts of the city council. You know, I just saw a draft of the environmental action plan that Council President Beggs has been working on, and I really, really like the idea of us going carbon neutral by 2050, and all the, you know, I want to push the envelope further on, like he's talking about, you know, the carbon emissions and the CO2 emissions, kind of working towards making all buses electrical so that there's zero emissions. I want to push the envelope a little bit more. And say we need to be less reliant on carbon dioxide, on fossil fuels. And I support green energy alternatives such as hybrid or electric vehicles being purchased by the city for sure. And I support the efforts of the city council to make Spokane air, water, and land as clean as possible. I definitely am for sustainability and combating climate change. That's very, very important to me. And I want to see some evidence of us actually doing more with the recycling. You know, whether there's plenty of space in District 1. If we put up a plant for recycling plastic or recycling glass or whatever the case may be, you know, I would love to see something like that happen in my district.
All right. And the last question I have, which I'm also asking every candidate, is why are you the best fit for your district, you know, compared to your opponents?
So I am running because I strongly believe I am the right fit for the district. The council needs someone who will stand up for District 1 and ensure we get the investment in our community that is needed. All the federal funding that is going to be available, District 1, I want to make sure that we get a little bit, perhaps even more than our fair share, because we've kind of been denied that in the past century, almost 96 years. So District 1, as I said earlier, we generate the most sales tax of the whole city, but we do not receive the same level of investment as other districts. And because of my different intersectionalities, of the fact that I'm an immigrant, I'm a single mother, I'm a renter, and I've lived in the district for about 10 years. I am a scientist and educator and a community leader. So all these different intersectionalities of me that make up who I am, I believe I make me a unique leader who brings important skill sets to the table. I believe in listening to my community and delivering results. And so if elected, I will always fight for District 1 and for the city of Spokane. And because you can't do anything alone. So when you're sitting on that city council, you are actually representing the whole city, not just District 1. So, but it is important for me to bring all the voices from my district to city council so that we are all represented. This is why I'm running, and this is why I'm the best fit for this position.
Well, I think that was most of my questions. Thank you for taking some time to talk to me, you know, out of your lunch break today. I appreciate that.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to come and talk to everybody.